All right, episode 5 with Christine was such a fun episode to record. I have only known Christine for a very short amount of time. We met at the start of our Superintendent Leadership Quality Standards course through the University of Calgary. And from the moment we did our introductions, I thought, I need to connect with this person. I need to hear this person's story. And this person has a story that needs to be shared with you. So I hope that as we unpack everything that Christine brings to the table, you really pull some meaning behind her passion and her core values and her earth about what's driving her. So sit back, relax, and I hope you enjoy.
This is the Elemental Educator, the podcast where we kindle the fires of dialogue with the alchemists of education. We're here to embark on a journey where ancient wisdom meets the contemporary world of education. On Elemental Educator, we dive into the deep waters of adaptability, feel the grounding earth of core values, ride the swift winds of change, and ignite the fiery spirit of risk-taking. Fire, earth, wind, water. This is the Elemental Educator, and now your host, Tyler Como.
All right, alchemists, I am so excited to be here with Chris Meaden tonight. Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So we just finished a class together, actually, our Superintendent Leadership Quality Standards, and that was a busy 3 months.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And the thought of spending 3 hours going to class at the end of a busy day was quickly erased because of the quality of the conversation. And I would say the great leadership of our facilitators who did a great job of making it meaningful and thought-provoking.
That's exactly what I was thinking too. It was right up until the meeting, I was sitting there going, oh, 3 hours here. And then I'm sitting there at the end of it going, where did the 3 hours go? Because the conversation was so powerful. That being said, that's the end of our journey where we were right now. I want to know the start of your journey and how you got to those meetings where you were with me. So I would absolutely love, Chris, if you just took some time and shared with me, how did you start and how did you get to where we were, where we're sitting virtually with each other?
Oh, that's such a good question, because when I went into my first role as a teacher in rural Saskatchewan, I thought after about 6 months that there was no way I was going to do that for the rest of my life, because I remember being absolutely overwhelmed. And at that time, quite often, you were teaching in rural Saskatchewan 9 or 10 different subjects. And quite often other subjects would be added as required, and coaching sports and all of those things. And it was just an absolutely overwhelming job at the beginning. But the best thing about teaching is, of course, the students that you work with, but also your colleagues and your staff. And I just had amazing mentors along the way. Both seasoned, absolutely expert teachers, as well as amazing leaders. So I kept going. Didn't come out of university with a degree right away. I was lucky enough, as I said, to get a job in rural Saskatchewan. So ended up going to a farming community about 3 hours away from where I was currently living, and started a job there and kept that job for a couple of years, and went back and finished my first degree in the summers. And it was just, like I say, just amazing number of people along the way that helped me, including key friends and family. And then I took a course by a fellow by the name of George Betts, and he was a gifted educator and speaker and researcher. And it absolutely changed sort of the way I was thinking about teaching and learning. It really taught me, I think, how to question. It taught me that I wasn't always the expert in everything. It taught me that education should be strength-based. And so I was teaching grade 7 to 12 English and doing some work in special education. And I came to Calgary to work with gifted kids. And it was just a total risk and opportunity. Very lucky to come out to Alberta and be a part of a very large and progressive organization. And then through that wonderful experience, I went from teaching kind of great, like I said, grade 7 to 12, and was teaching 4, 5, 6 gifted kids, and then moved into junior high, then did a lot of work with career development and career pathways with the Calgary Board of Education, and then was able to get back into a love, which was administration and leadership in a middle school, and then opening a brand new high school here alongside a Canadian astronaut. So I've had just amazing pivotal experiences that have made me be a learner and that have shaped what I believe about education.
And what's crazy about that is all of this at just the age of 29, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
That I really like, Tyler. Thanks for that.
We'll make sure that's the emphasis. At 29, here's what we've done. Which is, you know what, though? This story is incredible. And there's so many layers in it that we can unpack. And I want to jump back to the course you took from your speaker. And if I'm understanding it correctly, they actually helped you establish your values and root your mindset. And so how did that message translate to your academics and your pedagogy?
Oh, yeah. That, I think at the time, and went to this course, all like we all do often, all by myself. I didn't know anyone. And I was teaching in a very small school at the time. And so you learn from people that are teaching in big schools, some people in elementary, some in middle junior, some in high school. And it was just that opportunity to share what is the same about teaching and learning. And I had a tremendous mentor here in Calgary who talked always about the instructional core and teaching, the essence of teaching being about that unique and critical relationship between teacher, student, and content. And so what the teacher brings is very much what we talked about in those beginning years in gifted ed. If the teacher brings that rich pedagogy and that ability to be able to adapt the instructional situation to the student profiles, being able to look at different types of task design, being able to look at different ways to assess both conversations, products, processes, all of those things. And teaching to me very much is an art. It is also a science, and it's something that when you do it well, you study it for years and years, because every child, every situation, every new curriculum helps you be a learner in that critical relationship between teacher, student, and content. So in the early years, it was people like Tomlinson and Marzano and UDL and differentiation that built us into those very nimble task designers and assessors.
And we just recently had a conversation where we were told just about every school out there, every division out there has at some point in their mission, vision, whatever statement we want to call it, that a whole definition of what a lifelong learner is. But if I had to define it, I would just take the words you just said, that passion that's right there, that art and that science, that blending together. It's such a neat outlook on what education really is. So we get this really cool perspective of how this influenced you as a teacher. How did that translate to you as an administrator, and how have you instilled that message in the people you've worked with?
We are in a people business, and whether we are working with students, with parents, with teachers, colleagues, members of the community, it is about those core human values, about treating people with respect, about learning to listen, about asking questions, not just telling. And so how it is that we use those human qualities to engage other people are very similar, whether we're dealing with our teachers in a staff or our students. And I remember when we opened a new high school here, I would often say to our leadership team, like, this is my classroom working with you. Your classroom is working with your wonderful teachers on your team. So how is it that you listen to them? How is it that you help them be in situations where they can be successful? How is it that you help them be inspired to learn?
And what I'm noticing from this is you are a facilitator in that, and you're a coach in that, and you're helping them reach their own conclusions by bringing them back to their mindset and their grounded values. And you're bringing them back to why they're making the decisions they're making, not just for their kids now, but for their own practices, which is really powerful. And that's where that change process starts to take place. You also spent a lot of time in the gifted education world. Yep. And so there are so many differences and so many tangents and stories and nuances that this could go on. But I'm going to sum it up with a general statement that no day was the same as the last when you teach in gifted education. And so you had to roll with the punches and deal with change all the time. And so as you're doing that, can you walk me through that process on how you made that work and were so successful at it?
I guess dealing with change it's a little bit like being an entrepreneur. You don't necessarily know what the outcome of your action is going to be, but you count on kind of the relationships when you're dealing with a student, what it is about that student's profile, what is it that they've told you before that you can build on. What have their parents said? What's important to the family? What can you learn from your colleagues? But like I said before, I certainly didn't have all the answers. And it was one of the most powerful teams. I've been lucky. I've worked on a number of powerful teams, but just those teams where you can go, I'm struggling with this. What ideas do you have? What do you think we might be able to try? They were teams where we laughed a lot because not everything we tried was successful. And so,
wait, you're telling me that every change that you didn't work out perfectly?
No.
There we go. What you're explaining, yeah.
As a leader, Tyler, though, what do we really think we've got all the answers? No. And we have to. Obviously, we don't want to harm people. That's not why people come into this profession, but you're going to make mistakes.
Absolutely. And if you think you have all the answers, you're going to find out very quickly you don't. Absolutely. What you're talking about is the idea of co-leadership and distributed leadership. And that doesn't just happen overnight. It's very difficult to walk into a building and just say, hey, team, we are all going to make these decisions together and sit down and be as transparent as possible. You have to build this environment. And so how did you go about building that environment?
Yeah, a lot of, and I'm thinking I'm going to give two kind of specific situations. When we were absolutely so fortunate to come together and create a new high school here in Calgary, we spent a lot of time on the hiring process and looking at different skill sets and knowing that not everybody, as I said, has all the skill sets, and you want to build that diverse team. We did a lot of talking around values. We did a lot of talking around what we talked about in our course we were just in, Tyler, about our mission and vision, what that looked like. We did some social things so that we had some fun together and got to know each other on a fun non-work basis as well. And I think the intentionality around the design, even after that first year, the design of how we onboarded people and how we scheduled our meetings. So our meetings were absolutely not all business meetings. And there was a lot still of instructional design and organizational change stuff that was included. We deliberately moved our learning meetings to a different location in the building so that those were, it was a way of signaling that, okay, we're here to learn. We're not here to discuss the important things that need to be discussed about timetables and staff room and all of those things, but there was always time to learn as well. And I think the time that we spent in setting up the team, talking about values, building trust, building relationships was critical to that. And so that was my first example, talking about that new high school. But the second one was doing a district leadership role and having, in two situations, having amazing colleagues with whom I shared the role and having those people and being able to, again, talk to colleagues about tough situations and design our learnings and our meetings together was absolutely, it's what you said, it was co-leadership and it was absolutely critical to success.
And there's three things that I actually really like about both of these stories. And the first one is that not every meeting had to be highly intense, focused moments. And there were moments to just be a cohesive team. Makes me feel better about what I did with my staff. So people that are listening can't see this, but I'm showing Christine pictures of snowmen that we tried to draw on our heads blind, from the base to the scarf to the eyes. And I bombed it completely. Not even close, but it was some of the most fun we had. And we did it with the intention of becoming closer and building that trust and connections with each other, which brings me back to the second point that I really liked about your two stories here, is that need to build and cultivate an environment that emphasizes trust. And you touched on it in your second story a little bit, but how did you know when trust was established?
Sometimes because you're in a tough situation or it's a crisis and it's the way that people respond to that. I think when trust is established, though, you also see people being vulnerable. You can hear people asking questions about, I just don't know. Like, we were big into changing our philosophies to outcomes-based assessment in high school. And so we had a lot of conversations about, I just don't get how this works. And if people are able to be honest to me that and be vulnerable, that tells you that there's some trust being built.
And I like that one of the first things you said was you can tell when you've built trust in a moment of crisis and problems, because that's the ultimate test of if there's trust in your building. But then to go on and share those little examples to tell if you're moving in the right direction for it. The first part that I really liked about your stories was actually about you brought it back to defining your values as a group before you moved forward. So you brought it back to having that collective grounded mindset to have alignment before you move forward. But right at the end, you touched also on something cool. So I'm zipping here as we go, because there's so many cool things to unpack with your simple, just 3 years of experience. but what I want to get at is you brought up the idea of outcome-based reporting. And I think where you're alluding this to is the concept of high school redesign. And I'm hoping that you can talk a little bit about this process and what you did with your buildings.
Yeah, I was able to be involved in that work when there was absolutely tremendous provincial support for the work. There was amazing jurisdictional or system support for the work. And there was amazing research support for the work through some of the research of Sharon Friesen and the Galileo Educational Network. And so, and then of course, the people like Shimmer and some of the assessments and being done at the time too. So it was risky, and we felt a lot of pushback from some places. We were called at some points Care Bear High. And I laughed because I thought, you know what? If somebody's going to take us to task for caring, I'm okay with that. And the kids told us we created a yes culture. And it's really creating a culture where it's a how might we, that design thinking kind of attitude. And we did that through the team building, not only intentionally with our teachers and our leaders, also our student leaders. We did that through lots of conversations with the community, working with our provincial experts, other experts in other schools in the province, as I said, through the researchers, bringing them in, talking all the time, making our work visible. One of the most powerful things that we did, questions around assessments, was having kids sit with their teachers, and the teachers talked about how they were assessing, and then the students talked to their rubrics and how it was they knew they were progressing. And nothing is stronger than the student voice when they talk about their learning. So making learning visible. Yes.
That's amazing. And if there's anything I know about the Care Bears, it's when they all come together in that Care Bear stare, there is nothing that can stop that. That's a little childhood thing for me there. But what's really cool is you're also talking about this idea of collective efficacy and the belief that as a group, if we all believe that this is the right thing, it can actually become a movement and something very powerful within leadership. So in that process, you were facing adversity. You did face challenges of groups and people saying, and the naysayers saying, this isn't going to work. What do you think you're doing? This isn't what's best for kids. And those are very tough conversations to have. They're not arguments, but they're conversations. And so how did you navigate those waters of conversation with these differing perspectives on what you're doing and how it's best for kids?
It's the proverbial elephant, isn't it? It's one conversation at a time, one bite at a time. And I think it's also creating the stories of success. Again, having those students use the language of the discipline to talk about their learning. And when they can do that, it is so evident that they are being engaged. So it's capturing those moments. And then, of course, as always, the numbers tell a story as well. We were very proud of our course completion. And as we grew and increased our high school graduation rates, and we were able to capture the next step plans that students had based on their high school experience. So all of those things were really important.
So that brings me to where we are now, which is you're now starting something new up.
Yes.
And so I have so many questions about this, but we'll leave it to two for now, and I'll try to contain myself here. So my first question is, with all of this, why are you taking this leap?
Oh, two reasons. One, because I believe in this work. And I believe in it, the people that are doing this work. So it's ideas and people for me. I've been very lucky in my career. As I said, I've spent quite a bit of time in career development. I was able to have a system role looking at high school redesign and transitions. And core elements of that were growing a dual credit program and off-campus program and exploratory. We had a number of exploratory career development programs as well. And the success stories of the kids were absolutely phenomenal. We had amazing relationships with post-secondaries, with business and community organizations that were interested in helping kids transition to next steps and to gain some of the work experience and micro-credentials that they needed to do that. So when somebody came to me and said, hey, we want to start thinking about a collegiate school that focuses on dual credit and secondary to next steps transitions, would you be involved? I looked at the people who I just adore. And I said, it was a people I adored and the idea that I adored. So I said, absolutely.
That's awesome. And you started to lead towards the next part of that question. So this collegiate, What exactly are we getting ourselves into
here? Yeah, it's a great opportunity in the province right now. Collegiate programming does support secondary to post-secondary apprenticeship, the world of work. And it's putting those specific structures in place to help kids understand that they can do this and here's what they need in order to be successful. Our current government is very supportive of the collegiate concept. And so I think that we had originally thought we would just apply to be a collegiate, but you need to attach a collegiate to a school jurisdiction. So we applied for a charter at the same time. And we were successful last spring in receiving both. We are building. This is an entrepreneurial task for sure. And I would say it's also a labor of love.
Which is all very cool. And I know that there's an answer to this, so I get to ask it and put you on the spot. But all of the conversation we've had so far has been about the grounded mindset, the values, the importance of working together. So how has the team for your collegiate / charter come together to root these values, build that trust, and focus on a co-leadership perspective?
Yeah, it was really similar to what I talked about in opening a new high school. It's a lot of talk time. And the collegiate and charter applications themselves are quite extensive. And in order to have a charter, you need to have a defined and unique niche in terms of that application. So you've got to do a lot of thinking about that. And in order to have a collegiate, you have to have the process in place to focus on that secondary to next steps transition. So a lot, we've been working on this now. In July, it'll be almost 2 years. And so we did a lot of thinking around this in terms of the application itself. And then I would say that every situation, every conversation that we're in, it makes us test that again. One of our board members, for example, is a real entrepreneur himself, and he was able to connect us with an amazing marketing company. And so through the development of our marketing and our website, the dreaded elevator pitches and those core messages, we had to go back and redefine again and again. We've got an open house starting this evening in 2 hours. So through that process, we've had to define again and be crisp in our messaging. So I would say it's been an ongoing thing, and every challenge, every opportunity will require us to think again about how we speak to this work and how we weave in the stories that we create in order to help us accentuate what it is that we're doing. I got off on a tangent, I think, there, Tyler.
That was awesome. And you just, you rolled with so many things that brought that connectedness of a grounded mindset and the importance of building trust. And there's so obviously so much transparency in this new startup, because you all have to be sending that same message at the same time. And that talk time is so important. Wow, Christine. So you share so many things, and you're actually giving us time before you jump into another meeting later today. So you're just so busy. And again, this is more change coming your way. It's more risk taking. You really have to be rooted in these values that you have. And I didn't really go there, but I'm going to go there now because you brought it up. But at the very start of our conversation, part of your why was because of the kids and the learning and the love for what you're doing. And so how do you instill that? Because ultimately what we're selling is this is our kids' futures, and we love what we're doing for the kids, and we're so passionate about it. So how are you ensuring, and how is your collegiate ensuring that's the message being sent?
Yeah, I would. So much of this is about engagement. It's and having conversations with kids while they're learning. Some of the finest teachers that I know are just, they're really about asking questions. And it's not about always having the answers. And when you're watching somebody struggle, whether they're reading or watching somebody puzzle through a math question or a science experiment, or if they're trying to get the widgets together in the shop, how it is that you engage with that and help them make those mistakes and try things again. Like, one of the most brilliant shop teachers I've ever encountered always used to say it didn't matter. He would, because he'd set these challenges all the time where kids had to build some sort of fire engine or robotics vehicle. And he would be more excited if the kids came to him with a box of parts that didn't work than when the kids came with just the perfect prototype, right? Because he'd walk through it and he'd ask them questions and they would laugh together and they'd try things again. It's redefining success in a way and framing it around the learning journey, not just the final product.
And I appreciate that you at least have the answers to the questions I'm asking you versus us having to figure them out together. But you're so right on this, that the best part of our job is to watch somebody persevere through some struggle. And if we don't get to help and coach and see the growth and the development, then why are we even here? And so that whole idea of mistakes are learning is such a powerful statement. And it's all about creating that environment where people feel comfortable to make that mistake and recognize that it's not a bad mistake, but it's a mistake for growth. So within that, we're reaching the end point here. You get to be done with me here pretty soon. You get to go on to your next meeting, actually. You had mentioned at the very start a whole lot of influences that helped build who you are. But at this point, where are you turning to for your inspiration moving forward?
Oh, you and I talked about the fact that we came out of a very inspirational course where people were not only knowledgeable about pedagogy and leadership, but they were also able to tell stories and give examples that would stick in your mind. So I have a number of people that have been mentors for me in the past, and I would have no qualms about phoning them and or asking them to come for coffee or whatever, just to run something by them. I've had some incredible co-partners and co-leaders that I trust explicitly and implicitly both. And I'm always inspired by my kids. I haven't said this, but I'm a mom first. And just being able to run things by people that I trust, whether it's family or friends. And then I hope that I still seize the opportunity to learn. I'm a part of another group that just sent a podcast out, YouTube out. And you should seize the moment in order to maybe delve into an organization or even an occupation that you're not familiar with, because you don't know where you're going to be able to learn again.
Isn't that the truth? We just always, if you're always looking for opportunity, you're always going to find it. Hopefully our audience is really picking up here the importance of taking those little risks at a time, being transparent, building that trust, being rooted in values and following those values for your decision-making process. But for anybody listening, what advice would you give them if they were looking for that next step or that next opportunity?
Be yourself. Know what your strengths are. Look at ways to build on those. Look at places to connect. We are better together. We really are. And if you were going to take a next step, what would allow you to be able to use your strengths, to be able to learn, to be yourself, to connect, to puzzle through tough problems together, and hopefully to have some fun?
That last part's so important, the having fun. And I also really appreciate, too, the tie back to that co-distributed leadership and the idea of who around you is going to help you along the way and be there for you and support you. I know that we're at that stage where, you know, our collegiate charter is still in that startup phase. And there's that idea of future and what's happening next. So what does the next couple of years look like for you here?
Oh, I would sure like to be able to grow opportunities for kids, to be able to see themselves in a number of situations being successful in post-secondary, whether they're taking a university course or an animal health course at the college, or being successful in an apprenticeship. I would like to be able to grow the number of opportunities that we have. We're going to start with somewhere between 50 and 100 students. And I think that this can be way bigger.
And it sounds like you guys have all the right things in place to make it bigger as well. So if anybody's interested in learning about your collegiate or wanting to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Our website. So it's fusioncollegiate.ca.
Fusioncollegiate.ca. Right on. And just before we wrap up today, what are your final thoughts that you'd anybody listening to know?
I would say that work is a part of your life. It's not all your life. But you spend a lot of time at work. So how is it that you can be successful there? And I don't mean successful just because you've ticked all the boxes. It's about, do you feel like you're making a difference, like you're being successful? Do you feel like there's opportunities to grow? Do you feel like you've got support and mentors? Do you feel like you are a support and a mentor? And as I said, you want to bring yourself to the workplace just like you want to bring yourself to your family and to your friends. We've got one life, and I think that we want to make a difference and be an influence in that life.
Christine, that's so well said. And thank you so much for giving me your time this afternoon. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you. This was an honor.
You've been listening to The Elemental Educator. Our aim is to illuminate optimal educational practices on a global scale. And second, we want to shine a light on the expertise and knowledge that Tyler brings to educational institutions. He's not just a talking head. He's a practicing educator, a school principal, armed with a master's in educational administration, and on the brink of completing his doctorate. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on Instagram, Facebook, and X at Elemental Educator. And to contact us, fire off an email. See what I did there? Fire off. Okay. Send an email to elementaleducator@gmail.com. See you next time on The Elemental Educator.